The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Brandy Spragata for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. Our first article by Hamilton Kane is titled, "A Fictional Book About Shakespeare's Son Helped Me Grieve the Loss of Mine." Books have seen me through the pandemic. It's almost a cliche among bibliophiles, but each week I run across this sentiment on Twitter and Facebook, in long-distance phone chats, over brie and bottles of Chardonnay in nearby Prospect Park. And then there's the novel that sees you, almost literally, in this unprecedented year, plots mirroring the trajectory of your life, reversals of fortune identical to your own. Characters who glide off the page and sit on the edge of the bed, soothing your anxiety with whispered confidences. They complete your sentences, complete you. Imagine my surprise when an Elizabethan Odyssey became a roadmap through a year like no other. In January, I lost my 18-year-old son, Owen, to sepsis. The infection swept in like a wildfire, ravaging his body and snuffing him out in under 48 hours. The previous week, COVID-19 cases had peaked in the U.S., while violent insurrectionists had flooded into the nation's capital. Grief, my grief, felt like a footnote to a vast malevolence, a ripple in a hurricane. The best way to mourn, I vowed, was to go off-grid. I hunkered down in my Brooklyn apartment, throwing myself into a skeleton list of tasks, indulging my wife and two other teenagers with Indian takeout, double masking at the gym, grooming the cats, hauling out garbage and recycling bins. And I read books, not only for work, but also for nourishment I craved but couldn't quite understand. The less my mind rested, I figured, the less restlessness would surge through me like a virus. Which led me to Maggie O'Farrell's Hamnet, published last year to universal acclaim and named one of 2020's 5 best works of fiction by the New York Times Book Review. I was late to this stunning beauty, but in this case, tardiness was a virtue. I picked up Hamnet at the moment I needed it most. In precise, lavish detail, O'Farrell recreates the story of Shakespeare's only son, also known as Hamlet, who succumbed to bubonic plague in 1596 at the age of 11. She shifts between decades flawlessly, braiding the foreground narrative with the personal history of the enigmatic Agnes Hathaway, the bard's wife and mother of his 3 children. The abrupt subtraction of one. In O'Farrell's telling, the boy slips away fast. His father is summoned from the London stage and dashes back to the homestead in Stratford-upon-Avon, but is too late. Agnes leans into her final maternal duty. She stitches Hamnet's shroud, washes, and dresses his body for burial. She begins at the face, at the top of him. He has a wide forehead. She dips the cloth, she washes, she dips again. The 3rd finger of his right hand is calloused from gripping a quill. There are small pits in the skin of his stomach from when he had a spotted pox as a small child. Agnes looks at her son. The birdcage ribs, the interlaced fingers, the round bones of his knees, the still face, the corn-colored hair, which is dried now, standing up from his brow as it always does. His physical presence has always been so strong, so definite. I lacked Agnes's resolve. After Owen passed away that bright, cold January morning, measured in minutes, the stutter of alarms, ICU doctors yelling across a carousel of CPR, I came to his bedside. The tumult had ebbed away. There was a hush in the room. The physicians disconnected his ventilator and dimmed the monitors. His breathing tube stubbed out a few inches like a lopped umbilical cord, a smear of blood and gauze around the stoma. I touched his curls. He seemed himself, just asleep. Pink-cheeked, slack-jawed, lips a rosebud. Later his complexion would ashen, his tongue loll, slug-like, from his mouth. 2 nurses nudged me aside and asked whether they could clean him up before my wife arrived at the hospital. Fresh linens, a starched gown. I said yes, but that I wanted to wait out in the lobby, where for an hour I huddled over my cell, scrolling through contacts, veering from call to call. I must have spoken in nervous fragments to at least a dozen family members and friends, but I can't say for sure. In Hamnet, Agnes O'Farrell captures that sense of lightheaded disbelief, an instinct to connect what just happened with a larger story. There's a global pandemic on, and my son just died. After Hamnet's funeral, a torturous affair, Agnes is hollowed out, her edges blurred and insubstantial. Her husband once again heeds the siren call of the theater. He can only mourn by going on with the show. He's already mulling a new piece, a ghost haunting a disaffected Danish prince. The bard's daughters act out. Susanna tantrums while Judith, Hamnet's twin, weeps in silence. Agnes hobbles around in a daze, immersed in country life, tending gardens, keeping bees in a skep. Only in the novel's last pages, when years later Agnes journeys to the Globe Theater to watch a performance of Hamlet, can she reconcile her tragedy with an art that transcends and sustains. The play's the thing, with many allusions to her son. The knowledge settles on her like a fine covering of rain, O'Farrell writes. Her husband has pulled off a manner of alchemy. We seek that alchemy from our masters, Shakespeare to O'Farrell and beyond. We seek to be seen in our most private, stripped-down moments. Recently, I was having drinks with an acquaintance, a writer, in a garden tucked behind a trattoria in Greenwich Village, when he asked how many children I had. Boys? Girls? I fumbled the tense. I have, had three boys, but now only two, before segueing into a précis of my loss. He sat across a rickety table, eyes glistening with tears, but the moment wasn't heavy, far from it. I'd learned a thing or two about subtraction from O'Farrell. Just now I'm holding the novel in my hand, flipping it open, and finding my reflection there. Our next article by Elena Nicolou is titled, Dr. Death Tells the Horrifying True Story of Christopher Dunch. Christopher Dunch, the focus of Peacock's true crime series Dr. Death, looked good on paper. When he arrived in Dallas in late 2010, Dunch's resume spoke of a skilled neurosurgeon, an MD and a PhD from a top-tier medical school, a decade of experience, and a central role in a pioneering stem cell treatment. Those who met him described him as being fast-talking, confident, and someone who always had a plan to fix patients' ailments, per D magazine. That veneer is how Dunch was able to set up a practice in Dallas and obtain surgical privileges at Baylor Scott & White Medical Center in Plano, Texas. We were told Dunch was one of the best and smartest neurosurgeons they ever trained, as they went on at length about his strengths. Representatives from Baylor Regional Medical Center told ProPublica in an email. When asked about Dr. Dunch's weaknesses or areas for improvement, the supervising physician communicated that the only weakness Dunch had was he took on too many tasks for one person. Dr. Death, which premiered on July 15th on Peacock, shows the horrors that followed once he was on the job. The series is based on reporting from the podcast Dr. Death from the same production studio that created Dirty John. Given the graphic subject matter, if you're squeamish, keep your finger on the fast-forward button while watching Dr. Death. Actually, hit the mute button, too. The sounds of botched surgeries are gruesome, made more horrifying knowing they're taken from real life. Dunch harmed many of his patients, including his childhood friend, Jerry Summers. In the 2 years he practiced as a spine surgeon across four Dallas institutions, Dunch operated on 37 people. Of that set, two died and 31 were paralyzed or seriously injured. He destroyed the lives of essentially every single patient that he touched, Joshua Jackson, who plays Dunch in Dr. Death, told Newsweek. Dr. Dunch's surviving surgery patients suffered a range of debilitating conditions, which ProPublica details. Permanent nerve damage, paralysis, loss of vocal cords. One woman came in for a routine operation on a herniated disc and bled to death on the recovery table. During a spinal surgery on his childhood friend and roommate, Jerry Summers, Dunch damaged an artery and rendered him a quadriplegic. In February 2021, Summers died of an infection directly related to the surgery. One surgeon described these as never events. They shouldn't ever happen in someone's entire career. And yet they occurred in Dunch's operating rooms over a period of just 2 years, an article in D Magazine reads. In telling the story of Dunch, both the series and podcast reveal how a flawed system allowed him to operate for so long. Further, both works question Dunch's perspective. Was it that he was unqualified and completely unaware of regional anatomy? As Dr. Randall Kirby, a real doctor played by Christian Slater in the show, says in Dr. Death, he approaches spinal surgery like a child playing with tinker toys. According to ProPublica, most neurosurgery residents perform 1,000 operations. Dunch completed 100. Or was he actually a skilled surgeon intent on defying the Hippocratic Oath and deliberately causing harm? In an email he wrote to former assistant Kimberly Morgan in 2011, Dunch seemed to be grappling with bloodlust. You, my child, are the only one between me and the other side. I am ready to leave the love and kindness and goodness and patience that I mix with everything else that I am and become a cold-blooded killer. Jackson developed a perspective on his character. He was interpersonally a monster, a nightmare to be around. A charismatic, charming monster, but still a monster. But he saw himself as the hero of his own story. He saw himself as a brilliant doctor and a brilliant surgeon. A man who was a victim of other people's bad work and bad behavior, he told Newsweek. Dr. Robert Henderson, a Dallas-based orthopedic surgeon who worked to alert authorities about Dunch, had his own take. He was a megalomaniac. Every patient that I interviewed told me that one of the first things Dr. Dunch would tell them when they initially met was that he was the best surgeon in Dallas, Henderson, played by Alec Baldwin in the show, told People. Dr. Kirby, on his end, called him a sociopath. His victims also had descriptors. Speaking to Inside Edition, they called him a snake in the grass, a monster, a drug addict, and even a psychopath. Here's how Dunch was able to keep performing surgeries. You're probably asking, how could Dunch have gotten away with a string of botched surgeries? It's a good question, and one that Dr. Death details, along with the surprisingly difficult fight to revoke his license. Kay Van Way, a Dallas plaintiff's attorney who represented over 10 of Dunch's patients, put it to ProPublica simply. The hospitals played a game of medical kick the can. Once Dunch proved himself inept, hospitals let him resign instead of going through the legal process of firing him. In doing so, hospitals preserved Dunch's reputation. For example, when Dunch left Baylor Regional Medical Center at Plano, the hospital provided a letter confirming there had been no summary or administrative restrictions or suspensions, despite the fact that Dunch had been suspended for 30 days following summer surgery. Upon his return, Dunch performed surgery on a patient named Kelly Martin, and she bled to death. Rather than protecting the public from harm, Baylor allowed Dunch to be passed on from hospital to hospital, Van Way told the Dallas News. Dunch was first reported to the state medical board in 2012 per the Texas Observer. Dunch continued to operate in the year it took for the board to investigate him. The Texas Medical Board finally suspended Dunch's license on June 26, 2013 and permanently revoked it in December of that year. After losing his license, Dunch filed for bankruptcy and returned to Colorado, where his parents live. He claimed to work as a bioscience consultant and researcher and maintained his innocence. I'm a well-trained surgeon. I'm a complex spine surgeon. My record is excellent, he told the Dallas Morning News in 2015. 99% of everything that has been said about me is completely false. Dunch was convicted of a first-degree felony in 2017. In 2015, Dunch was charged with 5 counts of aggravated assault for allegedly mishandling spinal surgeries and 1 count of injuring an elderly person, according to the Dallas Morning News. Dunch's trial took place in 2017. The 2-week trial especially focused on Mary Efford's testimony. In 2012, when Efford was 74, she saw Dunch for what should have been a relatively simple surgery to fuse 2 of her vertebrae. Instead, she awoke in searing pain, which she likened to childbirth, per D Magazine. The nerve root had been severed. Her spine was pockmarked with screw holes, and a screw had been lodged in another nerve root near the bottom of her spine, D Magazine describes. The jury found Dunch guilty of injury to an elderly person and sentenced him to life in prison. Efford, who is now wheelchair-bound, spoke to reporters following the sentencing. "I think it's going to be like a floodgate that's going to really open, crying. I'll do some crying. And I'll reflect back on how difficult those first months were afterwards. I had so much anger because my life changed so much. I was very independent, and I had to become dependent on others for transportation, for my meals, for a lot of things," she said. "I think all of us will be thinking about things like this, and hopefully there will be some tighter controls, more accountability in a lot of areas, so something like this won't happen again. It shouldn't happen again." Today, he's serving a life sentence in prison. Dunch, who is now 50, is serving time in a Texas prison. According to the Dallas Morning News, he will be up for parole in 2045 when he is 74. Dunch appealed his sentence and lost the appeal in 2018. According to his ex-girlfriend, Wendy Young, played by Molly Griggs in the show, Dunch is in touch with his two sons. "He has a job inside the prison. I don't know what it is," she said on CNBC's American Greed. "He works out, he reads, he studies the Bible. He'll call and say goodnight to his boys. Sometimes he'll have bedtime stories and try to be as normal as possible." Our next article by Lacey Johnson is titled, 12 Techniques to Help You Start Your Journey to Self-Discovery. What do I want? Who am I really? Those are fundamental questions that nearly every human has danced with in their life, and for good reason. Studies show that when we become self-aware, we're more confident, peaceful, and creative. But the journey to self-discovery, though often exhilarating, can be elusive. You might fear what you'll find. You might grapple with guilt about abandoning the self you've always known. Or perhaps, if you're like most people, you might be scratching your head about where to begin. If so, take comfort in knowing that just as self-love looks, feels, and unfolds in wildly different ways from one person to the next, so does the practice of learning about yourself. And while your journey might involve traveling across oceans or leaning into a spiritual practice like meditation, the quest for self-discovery isn't as simple as collecting stamps on your passport or stretching across a yoga mat. So if you've been thinking about pulling the lid off of your unmet dreams, desires, passions, strengths, and values, stay with us. We rounded up the experts and asked them to share their self-discovery rituals, techniques, and tools, along with some empowering ideas to keep in mind as you explore deeper realms of who you are and who you wish to become. Start a morning journaling practice. Julia Cameron, best-selling author of The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity, coined the now-famous ritual she calls morning pages, which is essentially three pages of stream-of-consciousness writing to be completed upon waking. Morning pages are like sending a telegram to the universe that says, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, this is what I want more of, this is what I want less of, Cameron tells Oprah Daily. Don't put pressure on yourself to perform for the pages, though. Cameron emphasizes that they're designed to access your curiosities. This disciplined daily practice is private, sacred, and full of surprises. Many people begin to find themselves fascinating. This is because morning pages train you to see your own worthiness, she says. Take an audit of your relationships. Terry Cole, licensed psychotherapist and author of Boundary Boss, suggests kicking off your self-discovery journey with a brave and honest inventory of your relationships, particularly the ones that might be draining or toxic. Ask yourself, where do I feel resentful, unseen, or taken advantage of? Before you can more deeply know yourself, you absolutely must determine your boundaries with others. You need to become more discerning about who gets access to you, because not everyone should, she tells Oprah Daily. Make a list of things that delight you. Make an okay and a not okay list. It might contain things that either enhance or hinder your sense of ease. These small shifts are important because they offer ways of showing yourself that you're worthy of your own attention and consideration, says Cole. For example, you might decide that your home will feel more cozy and inviting if you fill it with softer light and scented candles. Or it could simply be a matter of deciding that you need to craft a thoughtful email to your boss about your lack of work-life balance. The idea is to stop doing anything that goes against your constitution. Making small adjustments will allow you to experience more comfort and peace in all areas of your life, says Cole. Lean into a daily spiritual practice like meditation or yoga. Ryan Haddon, spiritual life coach and meditation teacher, says that engaging in a quiet spiritual practice helps you recognize that any negative thoughts you have, no matter how loud or persistent, don't have to run the show. We have upwards of 30,000 unconscious thoughts a day, most of which are negative. By curating a spiritual practice like meditation or yoga, you're able to choose uplifting thoughts rather than be at the mercy of the negative ones that lead you into a downward spiral. That's true empowerment because you realize you have influence over your own mental and spiritual states, she says. Have a thoughtful, loving conversation with your inner child. No matter how long you live, there will always be a child inside of you tugging at your attention, hoping to be acknowledged and comforted. Cole says that revisiting your vault of childhood wishes and wounds is a key part of any self-discovery journey, though it's the part that makes most people roll their eyes. It can be difficult, but I've observed that you have to go back to the scene of the crime in order to understand why you are the way you are and why you're sensitive to certain things. The child inside of you needs to be heard so that you can give your adult self permission to stop hiding or doing whatever it is that may have kept you from fully knowing yourself, says Cole. Pay attention to what lights you up. What have you fantasized about doing for so long that you never got around to doing? It could be skydiving, studying a foreign language, or launching a side hustle designing business. Or following your inspirations might simply look like carving out time each day to indulge in the books, documentaries, and podcasts that captivate you, says Rachel Rogers, CEO of Hello 7 and author of We Should All Be Millionaires. Whether it's combing through your old bucket lists, banging around on a piano, or curling up with a cup of coffee in a rapturous novel, focus on what makes you feel the most alive, even if it's just for a few minutes a day. Consider leaving your comfort zone. One of the easiest decisions in the world is to stay where you are. Roger stresses that self-discovery only happens when you're willing to step into the future that you can't stop dreaming about. Sometimes we feel trapped by the space that exists in between who we've been and who we want to be. There might be something you want to explore or try, but you're afraid to let go of what's familiar. If something is calling you, whether it's an adventure, a life change, or a new business idea, listen, says Rogers. Know that when you get excited about your own growth and self-discovery, everyone wins. If you aren't acting from a place of authentic joy and fulfillment, when that's possible at least, no one in your life will ever link arms with the best of you. So attempt to prioritize yourself. We know it's easier said than done. Because if you want to serve the world, you've got to start by standing tall in your truth. I recommend that everyone sit down and brainstorm about 25 ways that they, their loved ones, and their community will benefit when they start prioritizing their needs and desires. Then read, reread, and add to the list often. Of course, there are stages with every self-discovery journey, and some are more pleasant than others. Over the years, Cameron has observed some interesting stages as readers move through her The Artist's Way program. In the beginning, there's often a feeling of elation, quickly followed by a stretch of anger upon realizing the ways they may have settled in their life. Next comes a period of bargaining, which is then followed by the peaceful acceptance of one's newfound evolution. And finally, if one persists through the disorienting stages, there comes expansion, which Cameron says is the beautiful realization that it's safe to take risks and reach for higher realms of fulfillment. Years ago, I taught these workshops where the rooms had these low-hanging styrofoam ceilings. You'd enter the space and think, oh wow, the ceiling is quite low. But then you realized you could tap it and move it to the side and see that there was actually 10 more feet of space above it. This is sort of how I see self-discovery. We often go through life thinking we're a certain height, creatively, intellectually, spiritually, but as you start to tap the ceiling, you're revealed to be so much more than you ever imagined, says Cameron. Remember that this journey is about you and that you're the one in control. Deep exploration often invites big revelations. You might suddenly feel a flicker of desire to live a life that's more adventurous and colorful, or to feel more seen and understood in your relationships. Or perhaps you might realize that you feel like you're a hostage to a career or a lifestyle. The process can be intense and overwhelming, and you might feel pressured to act upon those epiphanies with haste. If so, Cole says it's critical to remember that you don't have to burn the village down, so to speak. In fact, much of self-discovery and personal transformation can happen with a whisper. Don't fear the personal inventories and discoveries because you don't have to change or blow anything up right away. The process can be gentle and can simply look like getting honest with yourself about the things that feel right and the things that don't. You can even stay in a situation if you choose, but you'll be doing it mindfully. And that's the root of all self-discovery, she says. Embrace the ongoing process of your personal evolution. While it's tempting to view self-discovery as some shining destination on high, that's not reality. Self-discovery is more of an ongoing pilgrimage that we make throughout our lives, sometimes one that's jagged and lopsided with unexpected stops, disorienting detours and restarts. Roger says we should give ourselves grace and freedom to revise our needs as the seasons change and the years pass. Never stop discovering new levels of who you are and what you want. Constantly reevaluate your schedule, your priorities, and your life, she says. Coles believes that in essence, self-discovery is the audacious act of choosing to no longer be driven by the wounds of the past and deciding to become increasingly self-aware and self-determined. It's about seeking the progressive realization of your own happiness and discovering that the only life you can ever truly save is your own. Knowledge is power, but self-knowledge is the most powerful. This whole journey is one long, beautiful inquiry, an inquiry about knowing you, says Cole. And I promise you, whatever that entails, you are so worth knowing. Our next article is titled, 40 Gifts That Give Back to a Ton of Great Causes. It doesn't get much better than the joy of watching your best friend open the present you thoughtfully chose. What can trump that? When the item you purchased also helps to support a cause you both care about. Proceeds from the special gifts on our list to benefit a wide range of organizations, from those that champion environmental awareness, women's and children's causes, and the Black Lives Matter movement, to nonprofits that advocate for education, animal and wildlife welfare, mental health, and COVID-19 relief, and many other charities in between. There are treats for plant lovers, delights for foodies, homewares that double as housewarming gifts, jewelry for your favorite trendsetter, a sweet personalized puzzle keepsake for mom, and something for every book lover on your list. But best of all, these meaningful gifts have one thing in common. They give back. Confetti hand-blown glass pitcher, UNICEF Market. Crafted by hand, this blown glass reveals a bright confetti pattern that'll brighten up any kitchen. Each purchase of this pitcher can provide 137 sachets of oral rehydration salts, which help children combat dehydration and diarrhea. $50 at unicefusa.org. Family Meal, Recipes from Our Community. Send your foodie friend a digital copy of this charitable cookbook and let them know that all proceeds benefit the Restaurant Workers COVID-19 Emergency Relief Fund. Ina Garten, Allison Roman, and Bobby Flay are just a few of the notables that contribute their favorite recipes. $6 at Amazon. Daisy Earrings by Purpose Jewelry. These simple yet sophisticated earrings are handmade, and 100% of the proceeds from their sale go to International Sanctuary, an organization that helps girls and young women escape human trafficking. $26 at purposejewelry.org. Hand Care Duo by Thistle Farms. Packaged as an easily giftable set, every purchase of this scented hand soap and lotion combo goes towards supporting Thistle Farms, a nonprofit social enterprise that helps provide safe, supportive housing and jobs for women survivors of sexual abuse. $30 at thistlefarms.org. I Am Me Pop Sockets. When you get this handy phone accessory, or stocking stuffer perhaps, 50% of every sale will be donated to the Jed Foundation, which supports mental and emotional health for teenagers. $15 at PopSockets. Beats Pill Plus Portable Speaker by Apple. Perfect for the jet-setting pal, this speaker connects to any Bluetooth-enabled device. Plus, every purchase of a Product Red item helps to fight COVID-19. $180 at Apple. Women's Tie-Dye Calf Socks by Bombas. With every sock purchase, Bombas donates a pair to homeless, in need, and at-risk communities. $16 at Bombas. The NYBG Collection Bloomsy Box. Send the botanical enthusiast or yourself a year-round gift that keeps on giving. In collaboration with the New York Botanical Garden, Bloomsy Box has curated a monthly subscription of seasonal, hand-tied bouquets that are inspired by the world-famous gardens. A percentage of each purchase goes to the NYBG's conservation and plant science efforts. $70 at bloomsybox.com. Bob's Keepsakes 3.0 by Skechers. Bob's from Skechers' mission is to save and improve the lives of shelter dogs and cats through their collaboration with various animal welfare organizations. So not only will your animal-loving friend, sister, or daughter appreciate the coziness of these vegan knit slippers, they will be thrilled to know that a donation from the purchase goes to help animals. $45 at Skechers.com. Pride Rainbow Towels Set of Four by Williams-Sonoma. Celebrate Pride all year long with this colorful set of Turkish cotton dish towels, a great housewarming gift, by the way. Half of each sale will benefit the Trevor Project, which provides crisis and suicide prevention support to LGBTQ youth. $25 at Williams-Sonoma. Everlane Gold Cord Friendship Bracelet by Kendra Scott. Purchasing one of these friendship bracelets for your nearest and dearest will benefit women's and children's causes that Kendra Scott champions. Be sure to check out the other bracelets, charms, and more that give back to a range of charities. $40 at KendraScott.com. 1973 Retro Affirmation Tee. Stand up for women's rights in this vintage-inspired cotton tee, which pays homage to the year Roe v. Wade was passed. Every sale donates $5 to the National Institute for Reproductive Health's fight to change public policy. $45 at socialgoods.com. Azurite Marble 25-ounce insulated stainless steel water bottle by Swell. Reusable water bottles make great presents for just about everyone, especially when they're as attractive as this marble print Swell bottle. They're practical, earth-friendly, and the purchase of each bottle contributes to UNICEF's goal of providing drinking water to children around the world. $45 at Nordstrom. Imberly 60-piece custom heart puzzle by Parima Studio. Nothing beats a heartfelt, customized gift. Send a special photo to Minted, and they'll transform it into a puzzle that any parent or grandparent will adore. Plus, 100% of profits will go to Every Mother Counts, an organization that advocates for maternal health. $42 at Minted. Life is Good Forest Chill Cap. This baseball cap has that sun-washed appeal of a well-loved accessory and features a gentle reminder. To spread the wealth, the company donates 10% of its net profits to their own Life is Good Kids Foundation, which strives to use the power of optimism to help kids heal. $21 at Zappos. Salami Bouquet by Olympia Provisions. For the foodies in your life, this charming bouquet of gourmet salami is sure to impress and delight. We especially love that 10% of proceeds will go towards supporting hard-hit farmers through the All for Farmers Coalition formed by Food 52, Tillamook, and American Farmland Trust. $50 at Food 52. Women's Pink Up Clove Shoe. Clove was founded with the mission of offering healthcare professionals supportive and modern-looking footwear that they need for long shifts. Each easy-to-slip-on sneaker boasts stain and liquid-repellent materials, ortholite insoles, and sturdy rubber outsole for a truly comfortable fit. Thank your favorite frontline worker this season with a pair, and they'll also appreciate that the brand has donated shoes and compression socks to hospitals across the country during the pandemic. $129 at goclove.com. New York Times, A History of Civil Rights. Coffee table books make wonderful gifts. This powerful edition highlights a collection of New York Times articles that captured pivotal moments in the fight for civil rights. To honor the ongoing movement, $5 from each purchase goes to Black Girls Code, which aims to train young women of color to prosper in the tech, science, and math realms. $50 at Uncommon Goods. Kinto Coffee Bundle from Feed Projects. Caffeine fiends will be thrilled to receive this gift set of organic La Colombe coffee beans and temperature-regulating tumbler. Keeping true to Feed Project's ethos, the purchase will provide 15 meals to school children in need. $48 at feedprojects.com. Tune In Card Deck by Bando. Encourage someone in your life to explore their innermost thoughts and feelings with this pretty illustrated deck of prompt cards. A portion of the proceeds benefits Prismatic, an organization that empowers underprivileged young people to harness their leadership skills. $20 at Bando. Seamless High-Waisted Leggings by Akani. 10% of profits from these comfy, breathable compression, Akani, I Can Overcome Nothing's Impossible leggings, go towards nonprofit organizations. Some of the company's favorites are Clothes to Kids of Denver, Minnesota Freedom Fund, and Healing Wings Foundation. Plus, it was a pick from Oprah's Favorite Things list last year. $45 at Amazon. The Great Gatsby Tote Bag by Out of Print. Out of Print transforms literary classics into apparel and accessories like this tote bag inspired by the Great Gatsby cover. Every purchase helps fund literacy programs and book donations to communities in need. $20 at outofprint.com. The Future is Female Cuff by Bird and Stone. Yes, this cuff has a badass message, but for each bracelet purchase, 10% also goes to Planned Parenthood of New York City. $35 at birdandstone.com. Suede Lemu Mule by Ubuntu Life. Not only did Ubuntu's handmade espadrille mules end up on the Oprah's 2020 Favorite Things list because of their comfortable, easy-to-wear design, but proceeds go towards the Ubuntu Life Foundation. It was started by two pastors who work to provide pediatric health and special needs education in Kenya, according to their site. $120 at Amazon. Berry Square Bracelet by The Brave Collection. The letters inside the square spell out B-R-A-V-E in a clockwise pattern to symbolize an eternal cycle of, you guessed it, bravery. It's handmade in Cambodia by local artisans, and 10% of the company's profits are donated to fight human trafficking in the country. $45 at thebravecollection.com. Ho 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 Santa by Bobble Stockings. Each heirloom bobble stocking is handmade for fair trade in Haiti by single mothers who, according to the site, are able to earn the same wage as a nurse while working from home. 5% of profits goes to the Atlanta Children's Shelter. $85 at bobblestockings.com. Strength Necklace by Bando. Remind whoever wears this necklace they are one strong person. For every necklace sold, a portion of proceeds will go to Girls Inc., a nonprofit helping girls grow up healthy, educated, and independent. $38 at Bando. Chai Green Tea by Black and Bold. 5% of profits made from sales of Black and Bold's fresh, loose-leaf teas go to nonprofit organizations that support at-risk youth. $24 at Amazon. Geometric Butterfly. Buy a bunch of these charitable temporary tattoos for your crew. Proceeds benefit Campaign Zero in their fight to end police brutality. $1.50 at inkedbydanny.com. Griffin by Warby Parker. Encourage some shadiness with these classic square frames and goes with everything tortoiseshell. For every pair purchased, Warby Parker usually distributes a pair, but due to the pandemic, the company is currently shifting to donating personal protective equipment and preventive health supplies to healthcare workers and communities in need. $95 at warbyparker.com. The 100% Human Unisex Crew by Everlane. 10% of each sale from Everlane's 100% Human project goes to the ACLU to support their fight for civil liberties for all. Our pick is this boxy cotton crew neck tee. $34 at everlane.com. Hand-embroidered astrology pillows. Who wouldn't want to get a fun personalized pillow with their zodiac sign on it? These are handmade by artisans in India, and $1 from every uncommon goods sale always goes to a nonprofit organization of the customer's choice. Causes include forest conservation, anti-sexual violence, scholarships for students at historically black colleges, and natural disaster relief. $82 at uncommongoods.com. Geode puzzle. Here's another great find from Uncommon Goods. Send these gorgeous and challenging made-in-New-York birch plywood puzzles to your friends who are sheltering at home this winter. $65 on uncommongoods.com. Mini cane. What little kid wouldn't be thrilled to receive this colorful printed backpack? You can also let them know that their cool new bag helps other American kids. The brand delivers fully stocked backpacks at bag drop rallies, amongst other initiatives. $65 at statebags.com. Jewel Garden. For the person that has a green thumb or aspires to, this hand-planted succulent garden makes a great gift. Plus, for every purchase made, a portion of the proceeds go to water.org, and each garden sold provides 6 months of water for someone in the developing world. $42 at lulasgarden.com. Lola the Llama. Hand-knit with premium 100% cotton yarn, for every adorable doll purchase, 10 meals go to children in need. $57 at cuddleandkind.com. Luminous Dewy Skin Mist. This moisturizing spray is a best-selling product at Sephora for a reason. It gives your skin a dewy glow. The best part is that for every full-size Tatcha skincare product sold, the brand's fund aims to help girls in Asia and Africa stay in school and donates diverse books to underserved communities through its partnership with Room to Read. $48 at Tatcha.com. Our next article by Grant Reiner is "The Winter Solstice Will Be Here Before You Know It." We all have our ways of coping with the winter months, whether that's binging feel-good TV shows, baking up treats in the kitchen, or planning a warm weather getaway. But there's always some confusion as to when the first day of winter is, because in many places, temperatures typically drop to chilly lows long before the winter solstice arrives. In the United States, the official start of the season happens on the winter solstice. Winter Solstice 2021 will take place on December 21st, albeit at different times across the country. It doesn't fall on the exact same date every year, but occurs on either December 21st or December 22nd annually across U.S. time zones. Arriving a few days before Christmas, most people are long into their cold weather routines by then and may not even realize that this December solstice is taking place. As such, we put together some facts about the annual event so you know when it happens in your area, what the phrase winter solstice means, and the difference between a solstice and an equinox. Remind me, what is the winter solstice? The term solstice comes from the Latin word sol, sun, and sestare, to stand still, the Farmer's Almanac explains. At the solstice, the angle between the sun's rays and the plane of the Earth's equator, called declination, appears to stand still. The winter solstice is an annual occurrence when the sun is at its southernmost point in the northern hemisphere, reaching the Tropic of Capricorn. The winter solstice is commonly known as the shortest day of the year, when there is the least daylight, and it means that the North Pole is farthest from the sun. In the southern hemisphere, the winter solstice occurs on June 20th or 21st. The first day of winter is December 21st, 2021. Winter will come to the Northern Hemisphere on December 21st at 10:59 a.m. Eastern, per the Farmer's Almanac. That means it will take place at 7:59 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8:59 a.m. Mountain Time, and 9:59 a.m. Central Standard Time. The solstice and the equinox are not the same thing. Nope. In fact, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, they are sort of opposites. Because the planet rotates on a tilted axis, different locations receive varying amounts of sunlight as the year progresses. The solstices mark the days at which the path of the sun travels farthest north or south from the Earth's equator. This is why the winter solstice is the shortest day of the year, and conversely, the summer solstice is the longest day. The equinoxes, which take place in March and in September, are the moments in the spring and fall where the sun is directly above the equator and daylight and nighttime are relatively equal. Traditional winter solstice rituals have marked the occasion for centuries, and some continue today. Historically, many cultures around the world have celebrated or acknowledged the importance of the winter solstice, and there is significant mythology around it. Per National Geographic, ancient Egyptians built the Temple of Karnak in alignment with the winter solstice, and similar tributes can be found in Cambodia's Angkor Wat or Peru's Machu Picchu. According to History.com, past celebrations of the winter solstice include Saturnalia, the celebration in ancient Rome that ultimately became a week-long party with gambling, grand meals, and gift-giving. In China, Dongzi honors the solstice with traditional Chinese dishes being served, such as rice balls and meat dumplings, while also being an occasion for families to gather. In contemporary Iran, as well as countries like Afghanistan and Tajikistan, Shabi Yalda is celebrated on the solstice. A gathering for people to protect each other from evil, it's connected to the solstice being the year's longest night. Shabi Yalda, which means night of birth, includes wish-making, the eating of nuts and pomegranates, and reading poems, specifically by Persian writer Hafez. In England, roughly 5,000 people gather at the site of Stonehenge each year for solstice celebration and to watch the sunrise, which is organized by local pagan and druid groups. In 2021, you can book a tour ticket, which boasts a COVID-19 flexible policy for cancellations and refunds to visit the site. Even more gatherings occur in places like Scandinavia with St. Lucia Day, which technically happens on December 13th, their traditional solstice day. It features large bonfires, ornate robes for young women, and sharing baked goods. The beauty of the winter solstice is that you can acknowledge it however you want, whether that's by participating in a time-honored celebration or simply burrowing a little harder into your couch. Our next article by Deanna Janes and Elena Nicolou is titled Classic Christmas Movies That Will Put You in the Holiday Spirit. December is here, which means it's time to don your finest fuzzy socks and matching family pajamas and hunker down for a holiday-themed movie or enchanting Christmas book. If you really want the spirit of the season to overtake you, may we suggest tuning in to one of these classic Christmas movies that are steeping in nostalgia. Holiday Inn. Set during the World War II era, the movie follows a love triangle that unfurls at a hotel over the holidays. Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire's characters sing their way through various crushes. Irving Berlin wrote 12 original songs for the movie, including the iconic White Christmas, which ended up inspiring a movie of its own in 1954, also starring Crosby. White Christmas. Why there are two snowy Irving Berlin tales that each star Bing Crosby and the General Waverly's Inn, White Christmas, 1954, and Holiday Inn, 1942, we'll never really know. We just look at it as though it's a gift from Cine Santa and a good reason to queue up a double feature. Our favorite of the two, though, has to be the one where Crosby and Danny Kaye sing and dance to save their inn from closing. Christmas in Connecticut. This is a comedy about a food writer, played by Barbara Stanwyck, whose perfectly latticed persona as a housewife with supreme cooking skills gets exposed as the sham over one traditional Christmas she never agreed to host. It's the holiday rom-com you never knew you needed. The Shop Around the Corner. You've got Mail borrowed its tech-age narrative from this 1940 gem about a pair of shop workers whose feud grows with every holiday sale and whose love blooms with every letter of written correspondence. Yep, it's pen pal mystery love all the way with this one. And though there may not be a Santa cameo, it does star the season's other most iconic presence, James Stewart. It's a Wonderful Life. Whichever version you choose, Frank Capra's classic is an exercise in depicting the grass is always greener proverb. Although, should you prefer the black and white original, the grass is always grayer might be more appropriate. A seminal holiday classic, it stars James Stewart as a man who gets a glimpse of what life would look like without him. Miracle on 34th Street, 1947. Maureen O'Hara and John Payne star in the original film about that time New York City authorities committed a man to a mental facility because he thought he was Santa Claus. And though it can be debated which version of the classic film, this one or the John Hughes contribution starring Mara Wilson, is your favorite, there simply would be no miracle without the George Seton 1947 prototype. Dr. Seuss is How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Jim Carrey was the Grinch in this 2000 adaptation of Dr. Seuss's iconic children's book about the ultimate holiday grump. Well, right up there was Scrooge. Don't worry, the green-hued, mountain-dwelling loner's heart ends up growing a size thanks to Cindy Lou Who, played by Taylor Momsen, one of the cheery Whos from Whoville. A Christmas Story. If Ralphie Parker didn't rattle off his desire for an official Red Ryder carbine-action 200-shot range model air rifle with a compass in the stock and this thing that tells time, did Christmas even happen? It's become an unofficial rule, thanks in part to 24-hour airings on cable networks, that every year we all watch the Bob Clark tale about a kid in the 40s who tries to convince Santa to gift him with a BB gun. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Good for little drummers and little drummers at heart, this animated claymation gem is arguably the best of the video craft classics. About a toy maker elf who wants to be a dentist, an illuminated reindeer who wants to be accepted, and all their misfit friends in between, its iconography of the 1960s is just as quintessential 55 years later. The Preacher's Wife. The Preacher's Wife isn't the first Christmas movie to feature an emissary from heaven helping a human with his quest to be a better person. But it is the only version of this story to do so with Denzel Washington and Whitney Houston. Washington plays a heavenly guest who, during his stay on Earth helping a preacher, ends up falling for, you guessed it, his wife. The Man Who Invented Christmas. If you've already seen every single Christmas Carol adaptation, and there are many, including a few on this list, then check out this movie about the man who created so many Christmas tropes, Charles Dickens himself. Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey plays a successful author as his life intersects with one of his most famous stories. The Holiday. The Holiday is essentially two Nancy Meyers rom-coms for the price of one. Cameron Diaz and Kate play women who decide to swap homes over the holiday season, changing scenery between a gorgeous home in LA and a charming English cottage. Under the twinkling lights and dropping temperatures, they each find transatlantic bows. The Polar Express. This whimsical story is best served by the movie's animation style, which brings the cold of the North Pole and the magic of a train headed to the North Pole to life. The Polar Express is based on Chris Van Allsburg's picture book of the same name. Scrooged. Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol has been told over and over in Muppet form to dark miniseries on FX. But Scrooged, a satire starring Bill Murray, is one of the most memorable and unique interpretations of the classic morality tale. Bill Murray's version of the troubled protagonist is a crass television executive who has lost his way. A series of over-the-top ghosts help reorient his priorities. A Christmas Carol, 1951. Watching the time-honored Charles Dickens classic about a miser who changes his tune after visiting with three ghosts is a no-brainer, but choosing which version from an abundance of adaptations can actually make your head hurt. But we got you. If you're after satire, you want the Richard Donner Bill Murray comedy Scrooged. If it's animation you're after, you want Mickey's Christmas Carol. But if you're a stickler for tradition, go with the Brian Desmond Hurst, Alastair Sim crowd pleaser, A Christmas Carol. Home Alone. The McAllisters head from Chicago to Paris for Christmas, accidentally leaving their 8-year-old troublemaker son at home, where he finds himself defending their 3-story house against a pair of bumbling bandits. It's the film that turned Macaulay Culkin into a household name and John Hughes' box office beast into a household holiday classic. Love Actually. We're not sure which part of Richard Curtis's gloriously British Christmas ensemble film we love most. Bill Nighy is a pelvis-swiveling rock star, Colin Firth getting lost in translation, or Hugh Grant cold-knocking on residents' doors to find his one true love. In a romp that is as funny and heartwarming as it is sad and heart-wrenching, Curtis delivers a holiday film that, to us, it is perfect. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Though the word vacation appears in the title of this 1989 classic, the only place the Griswolds, led by patriarch Clark, are going is to Crazy Town. Preparing to host a big family get-together at their home in Chicago, Clark, played by Chevy Chase, and Ellen, played by Beverly D'Angelo, brace for the dysfunction that inevitably comes along with Cousin Eddie, Aunt Bethany, and a Rottweiler named Snots. Elf. It's simply not Christmas until Will Ferrell puts on that Kelly Green buddy tunic and frolics through the streets of New York City like a kid in a candy store. As a spirited man-child on a quest to find his estranged biological father, Ferrell stars as Santa's titular helper in the instant classic directed by Jon Favreau and co-starring a blonde-topped Zooey Deschanel. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Brandi Spragata, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Oprah Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.